All right, now it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, every Friday. We rebroadcast him during the week in the noontime news block, and also on the weekend. We get as much out of this as we can. It's like a sponge. We soak it all in, and that we let people take it all out. You'll find David, of course, at many other locations, his own website, themediabeat.us, and you'll find him at the Huffington Post. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Hi there, David.
Good day to you. I'm very happy to be back with you, reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York, as I often do, after taking a little break in Europe. But I'm back now.
Well, you know, and you're back at an interesting time.
But before you do that, just before, we have to mention where he was, because Sistine Chapel is not, you know.
I told you I was in Europe.
Right. Well, the Sistine Chapel is in Europe. And,
yeah, but he was other places, too. He just didn't stay in the Sistine Chapel. I'm going to stay here for my vacation.
I'm someone who reports consistently on ethics, and you always put the stress on this, Marshall. I'm sort of grateful for this. I'm not sure. Ethics and belief.
That's
yeah,
right.
I was in a very faith-filled place for a while, but I wasn't there for a religious occasion. Well, it was
music.
Anything that happens in the Sistine. It was music, yes, and it was sacred music. But in fact, for one evening, the Sistine Chapel was turned over from tourists, or indeed from prelates at the Vatican, who sometimes do use it as a chapel. That's what it is, after all, the Sistine Chapel. But it became a performance space this particular Sunday evening for a piece by, I'm glad to say, a Scottish composer, specially commissioned for a particular piece of Catholic ritual. But it was performed in concert form by a wonderful singing group called the 16 from London, plus accompaniment from a beautiful small orchestra from England, also the Britten, spelled B-R-T-T-E-N, named after Benjamin Britten, the composer, the Britten Symphonia, and the combination performing this new piece, modern, not quite concrete music, but modern, recently composed music that's deeply accessible and a very strong. A piece of composition which went down very powerfully in this really intense setting with Michelangelo's frescoes all around us. It was quite an intense multimedia, you might say, a multi-platform experience.
which brings us.
And if you remember the film, the agony and the ecstasy, which Hollywood rather overdramatized the painting of the Sistine Chapel by Michelangelo. Michelangelo was shown in agony, lying on his back on a platform, way up underneath the ceiling. It's not how he did it, apparently. He was able, with the rig that they actually produced in real life, he was able to paint that ceiling standing up. So that's something, I suppose.
All right. Well, now, speaking about something, Jill and I were talking about this early last week, middle of the week last week. Every media in this country totally ignored the story that was breaking out of, Europe and also...
Well, was it breaking out of China, essentially?
As China and Korea. There was about the collapse and the continuing collapse of the atomic testing site. On September 3rd. So Jill and I were talking about that and how it... You know, Jill called me up and she said, "Who do you think might have bombed that?" So they didn't bomb. And
I didn't say bomb. Wait, I said, "Who do you think might have helped with the collapse?"
Yeah, but I like explained that that's the only site that they really do testing at, and it was a known fault site, which people talked about years ago, and obviously that has put an end to their testing program for a while, and that's probably why he announced the testing. Ban, not necessarily the pressure from America, but then I do have to say what happened yesterday was an event that I did watch live on TV. I did watch the two leaders of North Korea and Korea get together and
maybe north and south,
and cross over and go back over the line, and I sat there.
It was a very theatrical minuet, wasn't it? It was an extraordinary piece of stagecraft for the benefit of the watching media. Yes,
and I think they did it. I think it was done well, though, and I think it was done to kind of put the world a little bit at ease, whether or not it's. I mean, it was all choreographed. There's no doubt to a T, but it really was an unbelievable moment to watch.
And that is what's fascinating about this is, you know, it is news as presentation for the world, because what Marshall left out is there is on this site. There is some issue, potentially.
The testing site.
There's some issue with some radiation, shall we say, leakage. And the only way, really, to get this cleaned up is to
get help from other countries.
Right.
And you know what? That trip to China.
so if you start with that, you know, if you put the pieces together, and you know none of this, despite the quickness of the dissemination of information, none of this happens overnight. None of it.
But still, the American media, instead of taking a look at this as a whole, and this is where I'll let you run with this, David.
I hope that you will.
The Cosby verdict is fine, but it doesn't have to be splashed all over. I think this, if they follow the North Korean story with what happened at the testing site and with what's going on now, it would be truly beneficial to Americans.
Well, of course, all news is valuable news. The curators, I guess that's the vogue term nowadays, the people who decide what gets presented in the public forums are constantly struggling with the idea of, what takes precedence? I mean, I can and I'm sure you can sympathize with the challenge that presents to people, but it's been a busy news week, of course. Lots of different things are going on in different parts of the world. Lots of things are going on purely in Washington. But when you count in other nationally important stories, I can go through the list, but you know, it's been a very, very busy time. It does seem like some platforms, to use that term again, in the media context this time, are content just to blot everything out in favor of one particular story. Others more sage, I think, and more prudent in their approach to what they believe their audience needs, are anxious to divide up the coverage and make sure that everything gets everything that is regarded as important gets its due. I'm often quoting here in this slot that wonderful phrase that is used very often by the BBC World Service when, sure, it will go overboard because journalists can do that when they've got a big story, but always they reserve that special moment, which I really cherish, when they say, and now for other news. It's good that people are noting that very major events have happened in courtrooms and in actually a very interesting case in California where we've got a criminal charge made 20, 30 years after the crimes were committed, thanks to some relatively novel
book, right.
Approach to DNA testing and DNA results, but there's a pileup of information. So what does the diligent news editor do? I think in the immediate aftermath of the extraordinary events in Korea, then of course that is a world important story, and I think that deservedly for a time. Will wipe everything else off the front pages. I'm not sure that the Cosby case, important though it is, and I think it is extremely important, needs to wipe everything off the front pages for more than the immediate response. And of course, it's prompted, I'm glad to say, the Cosby case has prompted lots of very thoughtful response about the length of time it can take for justice to be done. Also, the change in time and mood since the original trial that ended in a mistrial and this new trial that has ended up in conviction, and all sorts of other questions that derive from it. But we've got to keep our eye on the main story if one is in the business of presenting material with any sense of what might be national and international priorities.
But I've been waiting for the American media to cover this big story about the testing site.
They're not going to. That's the issue. What I wanted to ask.
I'm not sure if they're not going to, but it's certainly being blotted out by a certain amount of somewhat naive fervor for all the theatricality of the event. I mean, susceptibility of our media to theatrical occasions and well-crafted bits of drama, sometimes not well-crafted, but still very dramatic and tuned to our tabloid sensibilities, I think, is one of the biggest problems that we face.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about.
And that's been that's been demonstrated so clearly since the election of 2016. Reality television values, so-called reality television, the very opposite of actual reality because it's crafted and presented in a theatrical kind of way, that is what dominates the airwaves, the web pages, even the radio, certainly the call-in radio programs, and that's to our great detriment.
And that's what I wanted to ask, because you've also created a situation where people are, I'm sorry to use this word, people are, have been for so long, encouraged to sample their own media preference and sort of craft your own headlines. What are you interested in? That you end, you've now created a situation.
Yeah, we the news providers, that give the people what they want. Well, yeah, that's got a horrible logic to it in the end. Yeah, we give them only what they want.
That's terrible.
and that's not good for any of us.
And that is where I go with Marshall's question. It's like, yeah, great. They named the baby. Yay. Is that the headline? It's the headline.
Well, I think it's nice that we have a Prince Louis, but that's just purely personal. It's not terribly important, I have to admit.
That's the issue. And the other way that you said that, now we're on a radio program, we can do this, but there was a news story on NPR during All Things Considered, it was NPR News, that said essentially, I won't name the person who said it, but in the midst of it, she said, well, I don't think that such and such. And I thought, really? You're doing a news story and you've just said, I don't think. And if you were announcing the name of the baby, for example, you wouldn't stop in the middle of it and say, well, you know, I don't really like the name Louis because, you know, I had an Uncle Louis that was a cretin.
Oh, you're putting constraints on free speech now.
Obviously.
We've all got a right to our opinion. But I think that it's not true that news anchors have a right to their opinion all the time.
Well, not in the middle of giving the story.
Yeah.
That's the point. Yeah. And that, to me, leads to or skips back to, look, here's some information that you should have, along with this other information you should have. And I thought...
Yeah, well, for instance, even in the case of this terribly appealing, I mean, in every way, it has news value. The the minuet at the dividing line between North and South Korea, the signed agreement that they came up with, and the verbal follow-ups from that at the microphone from each of the leaders. All of that is splendidly impressive as a piece of live coverage, and then it's being rerun, of course, now in the hours that followed it, and will be replayed in the days, weeks, and months that follow it. But at the same time, even in these early hours, there is plenty of scope for saying that fundamental, or raising that fundamental question, well, what does it mean? Exactly. And already it is pretty clear that there are many unanswered questions in what came out from the two leaders there. It's all very well to say that we are going to give our best efforts, I think that was the term in the English translation, best efforts to creating a nuclear-free peninsula. That doesn't mean we have an agreement to end nuclear testing and the development of nuclear missiles. That does not mean that at all. What does it mean? Well, it means something we're going to have to find out. This is the role of journalism. More questions have to be raised, and certainly more questions have to be answered than what were answered in this rather breathless coverage of the theatricality of it all.
Yes, and apropos, speaking of, I'm waiting, this I just found on Deutsche Welle and theatricality, but, no, you know, we'll see whether you hear this again, all right? And it's from today. It is in conjunction with AFP. The headline is, International Police Severely Disrupt IS Media Mouthpieces. Police from the EU, Canada, and U.S. have carried out a takedown of the main mouthpiece of the jihadi group Islamic State. The Amaq News Agency was a major target of the operation. Now, for me,
a lot going on. Yeah.
For me, you go, oh, now that's... You know, because, again, that didn't happen in, like, 13 seconds either. Someone had to be working.
No, that's been a lot of effort directed towards getting that achieved, and who knows actually how much has been achieved in this particular
exactly.
coup.
Shutting down
these outlets has been in the works for some time, and it's impressive that they managed to do it in such a coordinated way, and for the time being at least in an effective way. But as we know, with all our history with IS, they have ways of developing new approaches, especially in the realm of media, which is one realm in which they have shown themselves to be remarkably sophisticated, considering that they base their fundamental principles upon a medieval mode of thought and replication of medieval history, indeed, with the caliphate. But yes, they're sophisticated operators in the media field, and the West has got its task really serious task cut out for it, trying to control and moderate sometimes to directly counter it, but it's a positive development if you're reporting from the West, and I suspect that it will have to take a new direction now, as inevitably ISIS will develop new improvisations to get around the cramping measures that have been applied,
and that will it's very likely that that will happen, and that since this little bit of news is unlikely to have any impact between, the accusations and the pageantry, et cetera, and the baby's name. By the way, I like the name Louis. So,
Prince Louis of Cambridge, I think it is.
It is.
Full, right?
It's Louis Arthur Charles, which is good. And the bookies got pounded because they were just so wrong. Arthur. Oh, no.
Albert. Nice to see the bookies pounded.
Well, yeah. Only because you've got, before the. Because I don't know how many people. You have to be above a certain age to know. Maybe that's not true. But you can bet on anything in your other country.
Oh, for sure.
And
we do.
Yes.
The Brits, and it has to be said, along with the Irish, because it's often a collaborative exercise. Many of the bookies' stores in London, I noticed this in my recent trip, are owned by Irish companies, and the storefront betting places. One of them is called Paddy Power, indeed. But yes, we have a predilection to betting on anything at all. That's true.
But that being said, I don't think that you're going to hear very much about the IS website operation past another minute and a half. Well, that's not true.
To quote our nation, Well, to quote our nation's leader, we'll see what happens. But I think you could be right. It won't be a major story. But it is an interesting and striking, I think, development in counterterrorism.
Which takes us back to the conundrum that I was flagging a little earlier. How do you tell people? By the way, there's a similar problem in nutrition. There's a similar problem in medicine. There's a similar problem. Pick your topic. How do you tell people who have only now been encouraged, for lack of a better word, to take in the information that they want to take in? How do you create a balanced diet out of that?
How do you ensure? Well, you...
and whose responsibility is it?
It's an almost impossible question to answer. How do you ensure it?
So you've got
five minutes. But you do keep trying. And you offer people choices, and you try and encourage the idea that choice and variability is good for you. And of course, one of the ways you do that, I suppose, this too is something borrowed from medicine and child rearing. You sometimes have to sweeten the pill. That's what journalism is all about. You try and entice people with an engaging headline and an engaging pictorial. Kind of approach, and you use all the oratorical, if you like, skills that you can to deliver sometimes the medicine that has to go down along with the sweetness. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It's not an exact science, I'm afraid, journalism, and we do have to just keep trying our best. And presenting people with a range of you know, all the things that are important, not just one thing at a time.
I just you know, when we talk about journalism, I think that the internet can be used for good with journalists because more and more people are going to it. And newspapers are doing this now, covering what's going on in Washington, D.C., by adding more reporters and adding more news bureaus. So be it. If this information has to be posted on the internet more than it is on regular TV, I'm all for that. But
you got to get people to go to it, I think people.
If you have news bureaus,
if you have interest,
and
I'm just saying that you happen to be interested. It's a bigger.
But you
problem.
Can make interest. You can make people be interested. Correct me if I'm wrong, David, but I think if you have the right correspondence at the right offices, that you can create interest simply by posting these incredible stories.
That's a variation of the notion that if you build it, they will come. Sometimes you build it and they don't come. That's the terrible thing. It's easy to get wrong. And remember that the whole background that we're discussing this against now is one of... extraordinary multiplicity of outlets now that has sprung up in the last 15 years, giving people more, you know, fully reported stories with more bureaus contributing to it. That's not a widespread development, by the way. It's very few news organizations have been increasing their coverage by getting more people on the ground. Very much the opposite has been the overall trend. Consolidation, shrinkage of actual reporting on the ground is what has been the most salient and telling development over the last two decades. And running counter to the overall trend by trying to present more and more expensively produced. That's what the terrible truth here is, that taking news from just a few centralized sources like news agencies and wire services is relatively cheap. Putting your own reporters on the ground is a lot more expensive. And that's been the conundrum facing a media world in which traditional outlets have found themselves economically cramped by the competition that the internet has presented. And they can't afford to do this all-important business of putting more boots on the ground as reporting resources. And now you've got the comeuppance that people are going for only what they know, only what they are given by a very restricted range of judges now, even though there would be appear to be a multiplicity of athletes. People are tending to go for just a select few that reflect their own views, the classic echo chamber development that everybody deplores, but still indulges in.
Yep. That's a very newsworthy term, yep, for we are out of time. So thank you.
It's a technical term, I understand. Yeah.
Thank you very much. This is a to be continued. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.